All right, we are taking your calls. As always, our number is 1-800-537-5252, and it is more cheese. Cheese all day. Cheese all the time. Today we have a guest in the studio with me, the fabulous Tia Keenan, cheesemonger, activist, and author of the books The Art of the Cheese Plate and Melt, Stretch, and Sizzle, The Art of Cooking Cheese. Tia, you ready to take some calls?
I am. I'm so excited.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
We have Eddie from Boston, Massachusetts. Hey, Eddie, what's going on?
Hi, how are you?
All right, I'm here with Tia Keenan. That's the other voice you hear, cheese expert. And what can we talk about?
Excellent. Well, I have a question about blue cheese, right? So I often have a really hard time pairing the right blue cheese, say with a cheese plate or putting on a pizza or using it for cream sauce. Because I know there's so many varieties of cheeses, but then the blue cheeses are like a mystery to me. And when I buy them randomly, I'll say, oh, I'll just try this one. They're super pungent, really strong, and I can't really enjoy them. So I kind of want to figure out what are great for crackers and jam, what I can use on salads, and what are blue cheeses that are milder that I can enjoy.
Okay, that's a great question.
There's a few pieces to that, so.
Yeah, definitely. As complex as blue cheese is, actually. I think it's important to think about, blue cheese is a very broad category encompassing mild, soft, sort of lightly blue cheeses. And then, on the far end, intense, craggy, deeply blue cheeses. So it sounds to me like there's a little bit of personal preference here. So you tend to enjoy milder cheeses.
Yes.
And then the second part of your question would be applying them to different uses.
Right.
So I want to maybe shout out what I think your some blue cheeses that you would enjoy are.
Okay.
And I want to talk a little bit about texture. Because a big part of how we experience the flavor of a cheese is about the texture of that cheese. So one of the reasons, for instance, that people tend to gravitate toward creamier blue cheeses is that the butter fat of a creamy blue cheese sort of helps ameliorate the intensity of the flavor. So I'm going to peg you as someone who would be more attracted to a creamier blue cheese. Now, when I think about the mildest, creamiest, most sort of user-friendly blue cheese, I'm thinking about something like a Gorgonzola Cremificato or a Gorgonzola Dolce. These are milder, very creamy, almost sort of floral, fruity blue cheese. Gorgonzola, don't get tripped up because Gorgonzola does come in a range of styles, okay?
Yes.
So, So Cremificato would be the mildest and most creamiest blue cheese. Now, this is also it's a great cheese for a cheese plate, but it's also a really good cheese for making sauces because you're kind of already halfway there to a cream sauce. Yeah. The cheese itself is so creamy already.
Like, Cremificato means, creamified, essentially, right?
Exactly.
I can understand that. Correct, yeah.
Yeah, so you can put that into a sauce and have a really super creamy, mild, kind of lightly fruity blue cheese sauce. Now, again, in looking at sauces, when you're selecting a blue cheese for sauce, you want to think about the moisture of that blue cheese. So you don't want to choose drier, harder, and often nuttier blue cheeses. Those are going to be harder to incorporate in a sauce because they don't melt as well, because they don't themselves carry that much moisture. And moisture is a really important factor in the meltability of a cheese. And also you're going to end up, those cheeses tend to be more aged, a drier, harder, craggier blue cheese. And so they have a more intense flavor.
Do those tend to be sometimes you eat a blue cheese and you have that intense blue mold flavor, but you also have like a spiciness, like it almost bites you back.
For sure. I mean, I think specifically of like some of the more aged Spanish blue cheeses, you definitely get that like spiciness.
Yeah, where it actually like feels like it's
tickling. Yeah, and going back to Gorgonzola, actually, there's a Gorgonzola called Gorgonzola Picante, which is a more aged, sort of denser, craggier blue cheese, and that gives that kind of spiciness on the finish.
Interesting.
Was this helpful? I mean, I feel like I could talk to you for, you know, we would need a whole day at least.
I don't mind talking or eating about cheese or eating cheese for days. What would be the use for like a really craggly, biteful sort of blue cheese? Where would you maybe use that?
Say if you bought one by mistake.
Yeah. So, you know, I think putting that on a cheese plate is a good idea. That's already a complex, usually more aged cheese. And to me, in my mind, those cheeses are really finished products. They're meant to be enjoyed as they are. The cheese maker and the affineur have spent a lot of time, you know, 6 months, sometimes a year, months at least, to create that product. And so that can go on a cheese plate. But also, I think those are good for salads, you know, just to crumble a little bit, just as an accent. You know, not necessarily to make the center of a salad, but to use as punctuation, like especially if you're going to put fruits in that salad, for instance, like you would see a cheese like that in a salad that has greens, that has nuts, that has fruit. And then a little dab will do ya, you know, a little bit of that cheese sort of crumbled so that it's part of a larger story, the main event.
Excellent. Wow. Well, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Cool. Thanks for the call, Eddie.
Thank you, guys. And I'm going to, like, go to Whole Foods and, like, try all the cheeses there now. Really, seriously. Thank you so much.
All right. Enjoy.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
So, Tia, you mentioned an affineur. What's an affineur do?
An affineur is someone who ages cheese. So this is based on the French tradition of cheese making and cheese aging. So in France, the tradition is that a cheesemaker makes the cheese and then hands that cheese off to an affineur, whose specialty is then to care for and age that cheese. So the affineur is the person who works in the cave, who takes care of the almost the biological needs of a cheese so that they can get that cheese to where both the cheesemaker and the affineur agree it's at its optimal expression.
Oh, interesting. So they're the ones that age it. So it's almost like, and they can decide, oh, this cheese can take more age, less age. It should be harder. It should be softer.
Right. And they also, you know, big picture decide that. But then there's variation. You can make, quote unquote, the same cheese. So say you're making a Comté. Mm-hmm. And throughout the year, that Comté will each wheel of Comté will be different as the seasons change, as the diet of the animals change.
Oh, cool.
And so depending on different batches, the affineur will say, okay, you know, I think this is going to be ready at 6 months, but a batch that was made 3 months later may be of a quality level that they feel the cheese can age for 12 months. So the affineur is really someone who understands how to take care of cheese, but also understands the impact that seasonality has on cheese, that different animal breeds, different makers have on cheese. And their job really is to take the cheese to its perfect point and then release it to the marketplace.
Oh, cool. So it's like the cheesemaker has the baby and then sends it off to boarding school.
Yeah, it's like, it's finishing school. It's finishing school for cheese. Yeah.
Right on. Should we take another call?
Sure. I'd love that.
We have Christy calling. Hey, Christy. I'm here with Tia Keenan.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Mullica Hill, New Jersey, outside of Philadelphia. My cheese question today is, I find I'm really overwhelmed and intimidated when I come into the grocery store and I see the really beautiful cheese display with all the artisanal cheeses. I usually just grab my block of Parmesan and run. I don't know where to start, what to try. Ultimately, I'd like to try new things. I'd like to build a cheese board that friends could enjoy, you know, that's not just the same old block cheese from the refrigerator section.
Mm-hmm. So how do you start?
Where do you start? Yeah. So when you encounter that cheese display, is there someone who works in that department who can help you? Because my first piece of advice is always ask for help.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if there's someone there,
I have no clue.
Yeah, you say, "Hi, I want to get some cheese. This display completely overwhelms me, and these are the cheeses that I know that I like. I know I like Parmigiano Reggiano. Mm-hmm. I know I like." I know I like cheddar. Do you have some cheeses that are in that style that you could recommend?
Okay.
Now, if there isn't someone to ask for help, I would be your own cheesemonger in the sense that you think about the cheeses that you have enjoyed in the past. Think about what they look like, what their texture is, what their flavors are. And then try to visually find some cheeses that maybe look like those cheeses you've had in the past, mm-hmm. but are different cheeses. And then go for it.
Okay.
Pick one.
Yeah.
Usually, you know, it's very hard for cheese to be bad. So if you're a true cheese lover, you know, going out on a limb like isn't usually a huge risk. You'll usually be rewarded with something delicious. So if you're someone who likes hard aged cheeses, looking for wedges that look similar to the cheeses you've enjoyed in the past, is probably a good method.
Okay. Yeah, I do prefer hard aged cheeses. So that's great to know. Is there a particular group of cheeses that work well together for presenting a platter to a company coming over? Like, is it best to have like one hard cheese, one soft cheese, any kind of combo that way?
Yeah, I mean, I think contrast is really important when you're making a cheese plate. So thinking about having maybe a fresh cheese, then
like a goat cheese or ricotta.
Right, and those tend to be cheeses that everyone will like. So that's like your like surefire cheese, you know, all your guests are going to respond to that. If they like cheese, they're going to like that. And then maybe going with a bloomy rinded cheese, so a cheese with a white rind or with an ashed rind. And then, you know, you could go straight to a hard cheese, or you could pick out a softer stinky cheese. You could end with a blue cheese. But going for contrast, going for different milks. So choosing a goat's milk cheese, a cow's milk cheese, and a sheep's milk cheese. Going for different textures. You know, texture is something you can usually see. So
even if you haven't tasted it,
Even if you haven't tasted it, you know, okay, I have something that's soft, I have something that's hard. So just really going for contrast, I think, is the sort of simplest way to get to a good cheese plate. Or the most straightforward,
not the simplest.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, right. Definitely not simple.
There's cheese is, you know, infinitely complex.
But it doesn't have to be hard. And it doesn't have to be intimidating.
Right.
Cool. Well, thanks for the call,
Christy. I'm going to do it.
Yeah. Enjoy
it. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. We have Janie from Tip City, Ohio. Hey, Janie. I'm here with Tia Keenan.
Hi, Janie.
Hi. I was wondering how one determines which type of cheese to pair with another food, such as a meat or a fruit.
So I want to say first that I think that eating and what we enjoy eating is largely a personal process. We bring our own histories, our own preferences, our own context to all the things we eat. So when I talk about rules for pairing, I never want that to overpower a person's experience in the moment. So if I talk about the rules for cheese pairing and I say X goes with Y and your experience of that is that X does not go with Y, then I'm never going to tell you that you're wrong. So I just want to acknowledge that first. In pairing, there's a couple directions you can go in. You can think about mimicry. So you can take a cheese that's nutty and serve it with something nutty or with nuts. Mm. So you can reinforce something that the cheese is already expressing. And I think nuts are like a good example of that. Another example would be if you're looking at if you have a cheese like a very aged Gouda that almost has a sweetness, you know, to serve that with honey, you're just sort of boosting what's already there.
Mm.
So that's one approach, is to find the flavor characteristics in that cheese and then highlight them through pairings that reinforce that flavor. Another way to go would be to contrast. So take a cheese, for instance, a stinky cheese, which we talked about with another caller. Take a stinky cheese that's just really like meaty and pungent and forceful, and you can try to rein that in a little bit mm-hmm. by using acidity to kind of cut through that intensity. Another thing to think about when pairing, which I think people are so focused on flavors in pairing that they often don't think about textures. So when we're thinking about a really soft cheese, to go with a pairing that's got texture, that's crunchy
or
crisp, is another way to highlight what's special about that cheese. So like a creamy cheese, when you serve it with something that's crisp, you're really showing the beauty of that texture. So I think with pairings, you're either sort of drawing out what's already there, or you're kind of being confrontational and like pushing up against what's there, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I think of like I have this like really not like an amazing like I just got it at the grocery store, but like, it's really like tasty cheddar. It's a little bit drier.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm thinking about it literally in my fridge right now. And it has this, you said the word nutty, and I think about that flavor and it feels like there's like this walnutty kind of thing. And so, oh my God. So if I put walnuts on a plate next to that,
yeah,
that could be so beautiful.
Yeah. And when you mentioned too that the cheese was a little bit dry mm-hmm. and hard. So, you know, playing with that, like I'm sitting here thinking, oh, that needs like a brittle, you know, it needs like, you could do a walnut. I mean, if you really wanted to like be specific to this cheese and go all out, like you could make a walnut brittle so that you have that that crunch, you have the walnut, you have the caramelized flavors that often come with aged cheeses and with cheddars. But I think the most important thing with pairing is to not be afraid and to be emboldened, because at the end of the day, if you have a pairing that you don't love, like nothing was really lost. I mean, you didn't, you know, it's not a crushing defeat. It's just a bite that, you know, maybe wasn't the best thing for you. But that experience always is a learning experience and can, you know, a mediocre pairing is just a step to like an excellent pairing.
And Jenny, I would say, you know, like also general rule of thumb, like a tasty thing is a tasty thing. So two tasty things are always going to be two tasty things.
Yeah.
Like rarely will two tasty things make each other taste bad.
Yeah.
And sometimes they'll make each other taste transcendent. And most of the time, like to be completely honest, most of the time it's like, oh, it's still like that tasted good and that tasted good. And like it wasn't amazing together, but it wasn't like wasn't sad to eat them together.
Yeah.
So like you'll just kind of feel your way to things that are awesome together, and the things that aren't, it's fine.
And I would too think about this idea of weight. So like a fresh young cheese, I would want with fresh fruit. A hard aged cheese, I would want with dried fruit. So this is about texture. It's about the intensity of a flavor. So if you have a light, airy, soft cheese, then wanting to put that with a pairing that mimics that at least in weight.
Mm-hmm. Like sort of depth or gravity.
Exactly.
Or just kind of like gravitas.
Yeah.
Cool. I hope this helps, Janie.
It does. Thank you so much.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
Well, thanks for the call. All right. We have Brooke from Huntley, Virginia. Hey, Brooke. I'm here with Tia Keenan. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Great. Thanks.
Hi, Brooke.
What can we talk about?
Hello. I have a question that started with brie and camembert and those kind of washed rind cheeses, which is, what is good funk and what is bad funk? Because they get, like, kind of ammoniac, and I don't know, do I just need to put on my good girl panties and that's, like, a good smell, or is that I've been too long in the grocery store?
Yeah. Okay, so I want to first say that the category of cheese that you're talking about are soft, ripened, bloomy rind cheeses. Brie and camembert are part of that category, and they are not washed. You know, there's a ammonia, it's a flaw. We shouldn't be having the ammoniated aroma and flavors in those cheeses. So what I really want to talk about or address in the answer to this question is what the best way to buy those cheeses is so that you don't end up with ammoniated cheeses that smell messed up and don't taste great.
Well, first of all, pause.
Yeah.
Is there ever a cheese where it's supposed to smell ammonia-like?
No, ammonia is really a flaw. You may get a whiff. I mean, it's there, just a little whiff. And that can be okay. But, like,
if it smells,
if
like
it's
ammonia,
overpowering, then something's gone wrong in the aging process, in transport and distribution. So these cheeses, they traditionally, this is a European cheese tradition. You know, bloomy rinded cheeses, France, you named two French cheeses when you were talking about these cheeses. This is their tradition. Historically, pre-industrial revolution, those cheeses were made in villages, closer to marketplaces. They were not made in the country and then brought to villages and marketplaces.
Okay.
And the reason that they were made closer to market is that they're very delicate and hard to transport. They're soft. They don't travel well.
Yeah, it's like a rugged mountain cheese.
Right. So, like, the rugged mountain cheeses that are made far from the villages, far from the markets, are large wheels, and they're hard, and they get transported.
You can roll them down the mountain.
Exactly. Yeah. These soft, ripened cheeses were made much closer to where people would be consuming the cheeses. And that was so that the cheeses could be eaten at their optimal condition. So when you're buying soft ripened cheeses in this country, you know, I think it's you're in a much better situation if you're buying cheeses that were made closer to home. Now, that could mean that they were made in the United States. It could mean that they were made in your state. It could mean that they were made in your county. You know, that just depends on where you're located. If you live in Vermont, you're lucky, and there's a ton of soft ripened cheeses made in your state, and you can get them at your local markets. Some geographies are producing more of these cheeses than others. So everyone gets to define, you know, what local means, essentially. So buying cheeses that are closer geographically to you can help make sure that the cheese is optimal. If you see that cheese, it's pre-cut from a larger wheel, it's wrapped in plastic, it looks like the paste is oozing out a little bit, that's not always a great sign. It means that it's been sitting in that plastic probably for a while. Plastic wrap is no friend of cheese, especially those cheeses. If you see anything, you know, if you see on the rind that you've got moisture, that you've got discoloration, or that the rind itself is sort of cracked and dry looking. So both extremes, if it's looking really wet or if it's looking really dry, that would be an indication to me that the cheese isn't being stored in a way that's going to help the cheese breathe and live. Mm. Those white rinded cheeses, they're covered in mold. That's a living thing. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if it looks like it's been entombed in plastic wrap, when you unwrap that, you may get that unpleasant surprise. And then also, once you do buy those cheeses and you bring them home, those cheeses are meant to be eaten quickly. You know, if you're buying that cheese and you're going to eat a half a pound of it, don't buy 2 pounds and put it in your fridge and, you know, chip away at it over the course of a month. Yeah. A Parmigiano Reggiano, okay. You know, a hard-aged cheese, you can get away with that. But those young, soft, living, breathing cheeses, buy them and eat them. And if you want more the next week, then go buy them again and eat them.
Right on.
And cheese is never aging in your refrigerator. I know people think, oh, I'm aging this cheese in my refrigerator. It's getting old. There's a difference between aging and getting old. And it in your fridge, soft ripened cheeses, they are getting old. They are not aging.
Gotcha. I feel so much more educated now.
Oh, good.
But I'm lucky. Virginia has such great dairies, and I'm never buying French blue meat cheese again.
Oh,
unless I'm there.
You know, there's so many wonderful cheesemakers in Virginia, and I have to give a shout out to Meadow Creek Dairy, produces one of my all-time favorite cheeses named Grayson. It's a wash rind cheese made in a sort of Taleggio style, and they're such incredible pioneers in cheese making and grass-based cheese making and animal husbandry and care for the land. And they have a beautiful farm in Galax, Virginia.
All right, Brooke, thank you so much for the call.
Thanks, Brooke.
Yeah, thank you.
Hope you enjoyed your moment with Tia Keenan.
I loved it.
Tia, I should probably ask you what a washed rind cheese is.
Sure. So a washed rind cheese is a cheese that's been bathed in some sort of liquid. It's either usually brine, which is a salt water solution, or some kind of booze. It can be beer. It can be wine. It can be water mixed with spirits. And we have a lot of cheese in the wash rind category. There are cheeses that are soft ripened cheeses that are washed in brine or spirits. And those are younger cheeses. They tend to be what we think of when we think of stinky cheeses. So softer, some of them can be very runny, but they're generally soft, creamier, and slightly stinky. Some of them can be really stinky and some of them can just be a little bit, you know, a little bit stinky. There are also hard aged cheeses that are washed as well, though. We don't typically describe those as wash rind cheeses, though technically they are wash rind cheeses. And those would be some of the Alpine cheeses that are generally washed in brine. And that's part of a longer aging agenda. I think when we think of wash rind cheeses, we generally think of younger, stinky
softer,
cheeses,
stinkier.
Softer, stinky cheeses. Yeah.
Right on. Hey, we're talking to you. And as always, you can call us 1-800-537-5252, or you can find us at Splendid Table on Twitter, Facebook, yada, yada, every platform known to man. And today we have a special guest to help us take some calls, the fabulous Tia Keenan. She is the author of The Art of the Cheese Plate, and her latest book is called Melt, Stretch, and Sizzle, The Art of Cooking Cheese. Tia, you ready for another one?
I'm ready. I'm so excited to be here.
All right. We have Amanda from Berks County, Pennsylvania. Hey, Amanda.
Hi, Amanda.
Oh, hi. So I had a question. My husband and I host Cheese I Never Heard Of parties, which are grammatically imperfect but always delicious. At these parties, we invite guests to bring a cheese that they've never heard of. And it's a really fun party. It really gets people talking and mixing the crowd in a great organic fashion. I was just wondering, what cheeses would you bring to our party?
Oh. Well, first of all, I love, love, love this idea. Because the best way to learn about cheese is to, one, eat a lot of cheese, and two, eat a lot of different kinds of cheese. And I love the joie de vivre of this. So you're asking me what cheeses I would bring to that party?
Right. What would you recommend for guests to check out and bring that you suspect that they probably have never heard of? You could really take it either way. We have no rules with this party at all.
Well, I think something that's really important when buying cheese is if you are lucky enough to live near a place that has a cheese shop or a larger specialty food shop or even a supermarket that has a cheesemonger, is to develop a relationship with that cheesemonger and to ask them what they're eating, what they're loving. There's always a cheese that the cheesemonger is like has on their brain
just like
that
so
day.
So into you right now.
And so I think if I were going to go to this party, I would actually go to my preferred place to buy cheese and really put myself in the hands of the cheesemonger. Now, if you don't live, if you don't buy your cheese from a store that has a cheesemonger, so if you're buying your cheese in a place that has like pre-cut and wrapped cheese, then I would think about going for maybe a category, well, letting your ignorance guide you. So going to a category that maybe feels intimidating, that maybe isn't your favorite category of cheese, and just taking that chance. This is all about, it sounds like this party is really about releasing yourself to the possibility of discovery. So why not let that guide the entire process? Or another way to think about it is if you love brie, to say, okay, I'm gonna get a French cheese, but I'm not gonna get the French cheese that I always get. I'm gonna get a French cheese that's completely unknown to me, and go with that route. So take sort of a little bit of, take some of the knowledge that you have, and then like swerve, a right turn.
Let me ask you a question, Tia, because I think for a lot of people, what would be, and I love this, Amanda, I love this idea, and I love how you frame this question. You should host this show. But I feel like one thing that is scary for people is, well, what if I buy a cheese I just hate? Mm-hmm. And for a lot of people, that's like, what if I buy a cheese that's just super stinky? What if I buy a cheese that's too spicy? If people like don't like the cheeses that are like really kind of like tingle or bite you back, you know?
Yeah.
If you have that in front of you, is there a way you can still learn to enjoy it? Or is it just like, is there something you can do to mitigate a cheese that's too spicy but still, or too stinky, and still try to get it? Get something out of it? Or is it just like, I don't want to buy this thing and find I don't like it and have to like toss it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the pain can be very real because cheese is, for most of us, really, you know, it can be a luxury item. It's it's gonna be a hefty spend on your grocery bill. So I definitely sympathize with that concern. I think pairings are a great way to try to rein in a cheese.
Okay.
So, like, if you buy a cheese that you feel is too stinky, that's usually going to be in the wash drying category. Acidity can really rein that cheese in and change the whole experience for you. So, you know, Munster would be one of the most famous wash rind stinky cheeses. There's a reason that when you go to the part of France where Munster comes from, it's served with the things it's served with. Now, typically it's served with mustard. It's served with pickles. It's served with onions. These are all things that can take it down a notch and sort of create a more balanced bite. So thinking about pairings, blue cheese. A typical condiments with blue cheese are often like sweeter condiments, things like honey or dried fruits. That's the reason for that is that blue cheese can be aggressive. And so we take something sweet to sort of bring it in and make it more of a complete, nuanced bite.
Pear or something.
Pairings are a good way to bring a cheese in if you're feeling like it's escaping you.
Well, that's a really great idea, and that as the party host, I always try to provide different options for pairings of the cheeses, but having the stronger pickles and onions is definitely something I'll implement in the future. Thank you for that advice.
Yeah, acidity and stinky cheeses are really important, and you can do that not just with condiments, but also with beverages. So, for instance, a stinky cheese or a blue cheese with a sweet wine are a port. You know, the traditional pairings with cheeses like that are there for a reason, and it's really to answer some of the concerns that you talk about.
Thanks for the call, Amanda. I love your cheese.
Amanda, I love it. It's like a G-rated key party. I love it.
Absolutely. Well, you guys come next time. You're going to get an invite.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Tia party's hard. So can you settle a debate once and for all? Do you eat the rind?
Oh, Francis. Short answer, yes.
Okay.
But it's complicated.
Oh, boy.
If it's a soft cheese, you should always eat the rind.
Okay.
If it's a hard cheese, it's up for debate.
That's fair. I know, like a Parmesan rind, I keep my Parmesan rinds and you can like throw them into things, like into a stock or a broth and like essentially like infuse.
Yeah.
And then take it out.
Yeah. You wouldn't want to eat just a straight up Parm rind.
Yeah.
But you can distill the flavor out of it.
Right.
In soups and broths for sure.
And that's delicious.
Risotto. I mean, I throw it into all kinds of things. Braises.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But some hard cheese rinds are gross.
I think if it looks like it's going to be dirt in your mouth, then you don't eat it. If it's waxed, you definitely don't eat it.
Right. Okay.
But soft ripened cheeses, soft cheeses with white rinds or washed rind cheeses, always eat the rind. The rind is an expression of the cheese. And the cheesemaker makes that rind with the intention that you are going to eat that.
So when you're at that party and you are at the cheese board and you see people just digging out all the creamy paste from a cheese and just leaving that rind just sagging and like collapsing on itself, don't be that guy. Don't be that gal. Don't do that to the cheese.
You wouldn't eat a pie by taking out its filling and leaving the crust behind. So just take the whole piece of pie, take the whole piece of cheese, and eat it. That's what you were meant to do.
It's the dignity. It's the dignity of the cheese.
It is.
The dignity of the pie. Just leaving it saggy and forlorn. Don't do that to the cheese.
No.
All right. Tia, this has been so fun.
I could do this all day, Francis.
I don't want to leave. Let's just like, guys, can we get some more callers?
Yeah, it's
just
like Cheese Abbey.
All right, well, thank you again.
Thank you so much for having me. Really a pleasure.
Tia Keenan is author of The Art of the Cheese Plate and her latest Melt, Stretch, and Sizzle, The Art of Cooking Cheese. And she left us with a recipe for truly one of the greatest dishes on earth, this super stretchy, cheesy mashed potato called Palm Aligo. It's unreal. That's Aligot, and you can find it at splendidtable.org.